That night, Tansed and Merrin slept in Taita's chamber. Before she blew out the lamp, Tansed brought Taita a small porcelain bowl filled with a warm infusion of herbs. As soon as he had drunk it, he stretched out on his mat and fell into a deep sleep. Merrin rose twice in the night to listen to his breathing and to cover him when the cold air of the dawn seeped into the chamber. When Taita awoke, he found the three, Samana, Tansed, and Merrin, kneeling round his sleeping mat. "Magus, are you ready?" Samana asked inscrutably. Taita nodded, but Merrin blurted out, "Do not do this thing, Magus. Do not let them do it to you. It is evil." Taita took his muscular forearm and shook it sternly. "I have chosen you for this task. I need you. Do not fail me, Merrin. If I must do this alone, who can say what the consequences might be? Together we can win through, as we have so often before." Merrin took a series of ragged, deep breaths. "Are you ready, Merrin? Are you at my side as ever you were?" "Forgive me. I was weak. But now I am ready, Magus," he whispered. Samana led them out into the brilliant sunshine of the garden to the ancient building. At one end of the marble table lay the surgeon's instruments, and at the opposite end stood a charcoal brazier above which the heated air shimmered. Spread on the ground below the table was a sheep's fleece rug. Taita did not need to be told. He knelt in the centre of the rug facing the table. Samana nodded at Merrin. Clearly she had instructed him in his duties. He knelt behind Taita and folded him tenderly in his arms so that he could not move. "Close your eyes, Merrin," Samana instructed him. "Do not watch." She stood over them and offered a strip of leather for Taita to grip in his jaws. He refused it with a shake of his head. She knelt in front of him with a silver spoon in her right hand. With two fingers of her other hand, she parted the lids of Taita's right eye. "Always through the right eye," she whispered, "the side of the truth." She spread the lids wide. "Hold hard, Merrin." Merrin grunted in acknowledgement and tightened his grip until it was as unyielding as a ring of bronze about his master. Samana slipped the point of the spoon under his upper eyelid and with a firm, sure movement eased it down behind the eyeball. Then, gently, she scooped the eye out of its socket. She let it dangle like an egg onto Taita's cheek, suspended on the rope of the optic nerve. The empty socket was a deep pink cave, glistening with tears. Samana handed the silver spoon to Tansed, who laid it aside and selected one of the bamboo needles. She held the point in the flame of the brazier until it scorched and hardened. It was still smoking as she handed it to Samana. With the needle in her right hand, Samana lowered her head until she was staring into Taita's empty eye socket. She judged the position and angle of the optic pathway as it entered the skull. Taita's eyelids twitched and shuddered under her fingers, blinking uncontrollably. Samana ignored them. Slowly she introduced the needle into the eye cavity until the point touched the opening of the pathway. She increased the pressure until suddenly the needle pierced the membrane and slid in alongside the nerve cord without damaging it. There was almost no resistance to its passage. Deeper and deeper it glided. When it was almost a finger's length into the frontal lobe of the brain, Samana sensed rather than felt the light check as the point touched the bundle of nerve fibres from both eyes where they crossed at the optic chasm. The bamboo point was at the portal. The next move had to be precisely executed. Although her expression remained serene, a light film of perspiration shone on Samana's unblemished skin, and her eyes narrowed. She tensed and made the final thrust. There was no reaction from Taita. She knew she had missed the minute target. She drew back the needle a fraction, realigned it, then drove it in again to the same depth, but this time she aimed a little higher. Taita shuddered and sighed softly. Then he relaxed as he fell into oblivion. Merrin had been warned to expect this, and he cupped one strong hand under Taita's chin to prevent the beloved silver head from dropping forward. Samana withdrew the needle from the eye socket as carefully as she had driven it deep. She leaned forward to examine the puncture in the lining at the back of the eye. There was no weep of blood. Before her eyes, the mouth of the tiny wound closed spontaneously. Samana made a humming sound of approbation. Then she used the spoon to ease the dangling eye back into the socket. Taita's eyelids blinked rapidly as it reseated itself. Samana reached for the linen bandage, which Tanzid had soaked in a healing salve, and laid ready on the marble table, then bound it around Taita's head, covering both of his eyes, and knotted it securely. "As quickly as you are able, Merrin, carry him back to his own chamber before he comes to his senses." Merrin lifted him as though he were a sleeping infant, and held his head against his sturdy shoulder. He ran with Taita back to the temple and carried him up to his room. Samana and Tanzid followed them. When the two women arrived, Tanzid went to the hearth where she had left a kettle warming. She poured a bowl of the herbal infusion and brought it to Samana. "Lift his head," Samana ordered, and held the bowl to Taita's lips, dribbling the liquid into his mouth and massaging his throat to induce him to swallow. She made him take the contents of the bowl. They did not have to wait long. Taita stiffened and reached up to feel the bandage that blindfolded him. His hand began to shake as though palsied. His teeth chattered. Then he ground them together. The muscle in the point of his jaws bulged, and Merrin was terrified that he might bite off his tongue. With his thumbs he tried to prise the Magus's jaw apart, but suddenly Taita's mouth flew open of its own accord, and he shrieked. Every muscle in his body knotted hard as cured teak. Spasm after spasm racked him. He screamed in terror and moaned with despair, then burst into gales of maniacal laughter. Just as suddenly he began to weep, as though his heart was breaking. Then he screamed again, and his back arched until his head touched his heels. Even Merrin could not hold the frail ancient body, which was now endowed with demonic strength. "What possesses him?" Merrin pleaded with Samana. "Make him stop before he kills himself!" "His inner eye is wide open. He has not yet learnt to control it. Images so terrible as to drive any ordinary man insane are flooding through it and overwhelming his mind. He is enduring all the suffering of mankind." Samana, too, was panting as she tried to make Taita swallow another mouthful of the bitter drug. Taita spewed it at the ceiling of the chamber. "This was the frenzy that killed Wotad the Northman," Samana told Tanzid. "The images swelled his brain like an overfilled bladder of boiling oil until it could contain no more and burst asunder." She held Taita's hands to stop him clawing at the bandage over his eyes. "The Magus is experiencing the grief of every widow and of every bereaved mother who has ever watched her firstborn die. He shares the suffering of every man or woman who was ever maimed, tortured, or ravaged by disease. His soul is sickened by the cruelty of every tyrant, by the wickedness of the lie. He is burning in the flames of sacked cities and dying on a thousand battlefields with the vanquished. He feels the despair of every lost soul who ever lived. He is looking into the depths of hell. It will kill him!" Merrin was in anguish, almost as intense as Taita's. "Unless he learns to control the inner eye, yes, it may indeed kill him. Hold him! Do not let him harm himself." Taita's head was rolling so violently from side to side that his skull thumped against the stone wall beside his bed. Samana began to chant an invocation, in a high, quavering voice that was not her own, in a language that Merrin had never heard before. But the chanting had little effect. Merrin cradled Taita's head in his arms. Samana and Tanzid wedged themselves on each side of him, cushioning him with their bodies to prevent him harming himself in his wild struggles. Tanzid blew perfumed breath into his gaping mouth. "Taita," she called, "come back! Come back to us!" "He cannot hear you," Samana told her. She leant closer and cupped her hands around Taita's right ear, the ear of truth. She whispered to him soothingly in the language of her chant. Merrin recognized its inflections. Although he could not understand the meaning, he had heard Taita use it when he conversed with other magi. It was their secret language, which they called the Ten Mass. Taita quietened and cocked his head to one side as though he was listening to Samana. Her voice sank lower, but became more urgent. Taita murmured a reply. Merrin realized that she was giving him instructions, helping him to shutter the inner eye, to filter out the destructive images and sounds, to understand what he was experiencing, and to ride the torrents of emotion that were battering him. They all stayed with him for the rest of that day and through the long night that followed. By dawn, Merrin was exhausted and collapsed into sleep. The women did not attempt to arouse him, but let him rest. His body had been tempered by combat and hard physical endeavour, but he could not match their spiritual stamina. Beside them, he was a child. Samana and Tanzid stayed close to Taita. Sometimes he seemed to sleep. At others he was restless, drifting in and out of delirium. Behind the blindfold he seemed unable to separate fantasy from reality. Once he sat up and hugged Tanzid to him with savage strength. "Lostris!" he cried. "You have returned as you promised you would. Oh, Isis and Horus, I have waited for you. I have hungered and thirsted for you all these long years. Do not leave me again!" Tanzid showed no alarm at his outburst. She stroked his long silver hair. "Taita, you must not trouble yourself. I will remain with you as long as you still need me." She held him tenderly, a child at her breast, until he subsided once more into insensibility. Then she looked inquiringly at Samana. "Lostris?" "She was once queen of Egypt," she explained. Using her inner eye and the knowledge of Kashyap, she was able to scry deep into Taita's mind to his memories. His abiding love of Lostris was as clear to Samana as if it were her own. Taita raised her from childhood. She was beautiful. Their souls were intertwined, but they could never be joined. His mutilated body lacked the manly force for him ever to be more to her than friend and protector. Nevertheless, he loved her all her life and beyond. She loved him in return. Her last words to him before she died in his arms were, "I have loved only two men in this life, and you were one. In the next life, perhaps the gods will treat our love more kindly." Samana's voice was choked, and the women's eyes were bright with tears. Tanzid broke the silence that followed. "Tell me all of it, Samana. There is nothing more beautiful on this earth than true love." "After Lostris died," Samana said quietly, stroking the Magus's head, "Taita embalmed her. Before he laid her in her sarcophagus, he took from her head a lock of hair, which he sealed in a locket of gold." She leaned forward and touched the periapt of Lostris, which hung around Taita's neck on a golden chain. "See? He wears it to this day. Still he waits for her to return to him." Tanzid wept, and Samana shared her sorrow, but she was unable to wash it away with tears. She had travelled so much further along the road of the adepts that she had left such comforting human weakness behind her. Sorrow is the other face of joy. To grieve is to be human. Tanzid could still weep.